Good morning. This is a meeting of the Safety and Operations Committee, November 7th, 2019. Before we begin our meeting, I'd just like to recognize the change in the committee's membership as a result of the special board meeting just concluded. Mr. Dorsey joins the Safety and Operations Committee as a member, with Mr. Smedberg now serving on the Finance and Capital Committee. Mr. Bulger will continue to serve as the interim District of Columbia member until such time as the district appoints a new principal board member, and Mr. Horner continues as the federal member of this committee. Now, on to the approval of the agenda. If there are no objections, can we consider the agenda approved as presented? Any objections? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. Next is the approval of the minutes. We have three sets of minutes to approve, September 12 and October 10, which were public meetings of the committee, and in October 10, executive session. Could I get a motion to approve these minutes? Second, please.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Horner. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. The minutes are approved. We have one item on the agenda today for a briefing and discussion, a review of the progress of Metro's preventive maintenance program, and a proposal from the general manager for improvements to Metro Rail service, including the restoration of some of the hours of service for the proposed budget year, FY 2020, that begins July 1st, 2020. Today's presentation is informational in nature. The committee will vote on these proposed service changes early next year in concert with the FY 2021 budget process after public has had a chance to respond in the series of public hearings that will be scheduled. Mr. Wiedefeld, do you want to start, or Ms. Mason, or Ms. Imposato? Or Mr.
Leonard? You want to do a safety contact or not?
She has done
you
her.
You done it?
She has
good.
Done her
right,
safety.
Sorry. Just making sure.
All right.
Laura, Ms. Mason's going to walk through. As you recall, last 2 years, actually, we've almost made this presentation. So this is an update on that, and we'll obviously answer any questions you have based on that.
Good morning, everyone. I'm here today to provide an update on our Metro Rail service hours and the overnight maintenance window. Before we get into the details, just want to set up the conversation with a reminder of what I know you all know already, which is there are 24 hours a day and 7 days in a week, which means we have a total of 168 hours. What this discussion is about is really a trade-off of what we do with those 168 hours, because every hour of track time is one of our most scarce and valuable resources, and so every hour is spent either running service or doing maintenance. So in order to frame that conversation, we're going to follow through 4 points. First, to reaffirm our commitment to safety and the importance of the overnight window to the state of good repair and our capital program. We'll provide an update on the preventive maintenance programs themselves, report out on the efficiency and productivity gains in our overnight maintenance window, and, in good news, propose some additional late-night Metro Rail service hours. First, though, some background on the service hour topic and how we got to where we are today. The chart you see on the right shows our rolling 6-month average of customer on-time performance. On-time performance is measured from when you tap in at any given station to tapping out. We know how long it should take you to get there. This is a measurement of whether or not you got to your destination on time. Pre-SafeTrack, that yellow block, shows what our customer OTP was in that period. In this period, we were doubling service, and we actually cut our overnight maintenance windows down to 33 hours a week, less than 20% of our 168 hours. During this time period, reduced maintenance hours led to slowly degrading OTP, which then fell significantly during FY16. In FY17, we started and ended the SafeTrack program and changed our service hours. Since the end of SafeTrack and the implementation of our current service hours, we have had consistently higher and even above target customer OTP. And this improvement is fundamentally because reliable rail service requires a state of good repair. You can see on the left some of our key highlights in this period. We've had our 7-year high for customer on-time performance in FY19. Our first quarter of this fiscal year, we are 89.5%, a full percentage point above our target. Service disruptions are down more than 50% on our rail system, and our track infrastructure incidents are down more than 85% from FY17, from the year of Safe Track. Furthermore, our track electrical fires are down 30% over the same period. So how did we get here? Well, reliable service requires a state of good repair, and that fundamentally means evolving from a reactive to a proactive maintenance regime. On the left, you see our upside-down triangle of how we used to operate: significant corrective maintenance, some capital, and limited preventive maintenance programs. Over the past 3 years, we've been working very hard to change this paradigm through two particular programs. One is having a robust capital program. When we look over the last 2 years, comparing FY19 against FY16, 3 years, capital productive work hours on the railroad are up over 300%, and our expenditure, dollar expenditure on our rail infrastructure has increased more than 250%. In addition, we've aggressively pursued preventive maintenance programs, improving our asset management, investing in reliability-centered maintenance, and improving our planning and scheduling activities. All of this in service of getting to that right-hand side of the target of doing mostly preventive maintenance, capital renewal on time, on schedule, so that we are in a state of good repair. And if we do those two things well, we should have very little corrective maintenance work to do. In order to deliver these programs, we primarily use our overnight maintenance window. And it's critical for many purposes. What you see here on the screen are just some highlights of the nearly 40 crews that go out every single night of the week. They execute our capital program. This includes things like our cellular network and radio infrastructure project, which also closes out 5 caps. It includes our traction power renewal, our tunnel ventilation and smoke detection programs, as well as tunnel lighting, among many others. We also use this time for our maintenance and inspection regimes for our power and track infrastructure, both to achieve a state of good repair and to maintain things like our drainage system, which cuts down on water in our tunnels, which ultimately reduces degradation of our assets and electrical fires. Over the past 2 years, the funding made available and the track time has been critical to renewing our station and track wayside assets. With this time in the overnight window, plus our planned track work on the weekends and major outages, we have been able to reduce the backlog by $1.5 billion to now a backlog of $3.68 billion in our station and track wayside assets. Furthermore, we continue to close out our CAPs, our corrective action plans that have come out of regulatory reviews. We have closed 47 of 64, or 73% of those that relate to maintenance and inspection programs. We also implemented the 6 PM programs described in 2016 when these current hours were proposed. We have prosecuted those programs, which include track bed cleaning, cable measuring, stray current testing, as well as torquing, tamping, and switch maintenance. These PM programs have helped drive our improvement in reliability, yet they are also evaluated annually to make sure they're being effective, and we continually seek ways to reduce the amount of effort required to deliver the same results, resulting in significant evolution, particularly within our track programs, torquing and tamping. At the end of the day, what it comes down to is that in order to maximize the efficiency and productivity of our overnight work window, is that we need to increase the productivity of our crews, increase the efficiency of our right-of-way access, and increase the effectiveness of work. All of these together are what enable us to increase service without compromising safety or reliability. So in addition to renewing our capital infrastructure and executing our PM programs, we've invested heavily in productivity. We send out more crews a night than we used to. We also send out much larger crews, and we've increased and improved the planning and scheduling to make those crews more effective. We've also increased the efficiency of our right-of-way access, getting more wrench time per night for those crews. Those combined have led to an increase in production. This is productive work hours executed per quarter since the beginning of FY16. And what you can see on the chart is a net result of the productivity and access efficiency. We have doubled our working wrench hours since pre-SafeTrack, and in particular increased it 75% since the first quarter of FY18. So every quarter we've been improving how much work we can get done in the overnight window. So with these improvements, we think we are now in a place where we can propose an increase in service hours that will not degrade safety or reliability significantly. But in doing so, we want to reiterate that safety and reliability remain our top priority. All necessary maintenance and state of good repair programs will continue to be completed as planned. With the better utilization of our overnight maintenance hours, we have this opportunity, but we will continue those investments and continue to evaluate the best balance of service and maintenance. In order to expand our late night service hours, we may use late night bus bridges and single tracking to ensure there's no backsliding on safety or reliability. And assuming this plan goes forward, we may adjust our OTP target to reflect more track work in the late night after 10 p.m. window. Overall, though, we believe this is a significant benefit to our riders, as the majority of stations most nights will still have this increased service, even if some face single tracking or bus bridges. So our proposed service hours for FY21 are to add back 4 hours of service per week. Monday through Thursday, we propose extending our closing time by 30 minutes to midnight. On Friday and Saturday, by 1 hour till 2 a.m. On Sunday, we propose keeping the same hours so that we still have two nights a week where we have a longer maintenance window, but during the day on Sunday to improve our service to a 12-minute frequency, matching the service provided on Saturday. We think these hours combined with better schedule adherence to limit the impact of scheduled track work is what best meets our riders' needs. On the Sunday service in particular, we believe that by increasing the frequency of trains, we can get a 10% improvement in customer travel time and add an estimated 0.6 million trips a year. So here on slide 14, we have these summarized impact of these proposed service improvements. We have separated them out as both the hours extension as well as the Sunday increased service, and the combined proposal is on your far right. Overall, we're proposing to return 4 hours to service. It does mean that we will need to find efficiency or additional planned track work to recover about 22% of our work wrench hours, but we do believe we can do that. Customer OTP may be reduced. Our target may be reduced by 1% to reflect that increase in planned track work, but we do believe this is a net benefit that will lead to an increased ridership, approximately 1 million trips, for a net cost to jurisdictions of approximately $6.1 million. I would like to note that these costs are baked in as part of the FY21 proposal, and included in there are the other changes to buses that is not reflected in this table. And finally, our recommendation is to approve the restoration of service until midnight, Monday through Thursday, to extend service on Friday and Saturday nights till 2 a.m., and to approve the proposal to improve Sunday frequency to 12 minutes. We recommend the approval of these hours because absent a board action, currently our hours would revert to our FY16 hours, which we think would have a significant negative impact on safety and reliability. And with that, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Mason. Any other comments from the general manager, Mr. Letter?
The largest comment is that we're not going to back off the safety needs of the system. We'll do what it takes to do that. But again, we think that there is a balance here that we can reach in terms of getting the work we need to be done out there and have it done. And I also think that, as you know, this automatically goes back to a different scenario, which we could not accept.
Let me start off with a few questions, explore some areas, and then open it up to other members of the committee and other members of the board. To start with, I must say this is sort of like Groundhog Day. We sort of come back to this issue every year with a similar presentation. Maybe it'll be a little different this year, but hopefully this will be the last Groundhog Day year and we can move on from this issue for some years going forward. As a policy matter, it strikes me that this is sort of a three-dimensional issue for staff and board members to deal with. On the one hand, there are the benefits for riders that come from being able to extend hours, go back to where we were or close to it. On the other hand, that has to be balanced with the impact on safety and reliability, because it essentially reduces the overnight hours that are available for preventive maintenance work and capital projects. And on the third hand, there's the impact on the jurisdictions in terms of the subsidy burden, which I appreciate you've said are already sort of baked into the allowable 3% increase for this year. But it does have an impact on some other initiatives that board members may want to undertake and explore. So let me first ask a question on the benefits, and so I'll focus you on slide 7. Someone's darkened all the slides there, number 7. So the proposal to increase hours, essentially to midnight and 2 a.m. on Friday and Saturday nights, comes with an asterisk, and that asterisk, it's not this one, it's number 13, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, there we go.
Which slide were you looking for?
I'm looking for the one that says balancing maintenance and capital work with increased service hours. That's it.
Slide 11.
All right. So here you point out in the last bullet that the increased hours may come with a, as you say, late night bus bridges and single tracking as needed to ensure that the maintenance capital work gets done. Could you give some broader scope to what that means? Do you anticipate that every Friday night there's going to be bus bridges connecting and single tracking on some areas of the system? What exactly does that sort of asterisk mean for the rider?
So for the rider, so our present reality is that we do single tracking after 10 p.m. Monday to Thursday on usually at least 2 different areas, so 2 different lines most nights of most weeks, and some weeks we do it on all 3 lines Monday to Thursday. Every weekend we already do single tracking or shutdowns, again, in 2 to 3 locations. That is what we've needed and will continue to need to advance our capital program. What this means is that we will probably see a slight increase in that, so you'll see 3 nights or 3 areas per night single tracking Monday to Thursday and more single tracking or bus bridges on Friday night. Currently right now we do not do a significant amount of Friday night work as the crews are getting ready for the weekend. We do think that that would happen here. We will continue to prosecute these programs as best we can within the overnight window. But where we need the additional time, particularly if a crew has a longer setup window, so a cable measuring, they need more time to bring power down, disconnect the cables to get into testing, we would do that on a Friday night or on another night during the week, potentially bus bridge around it.
So would the bus bridges be limited to stations on the periphery of the system, or could there actually be bus bridges on connecting downtown stations? I'm trying to judge
It would
the
be
level
all over
of ridership
the system.
That could be impacted.
I cannot make a promise that it would be limited only to the outer ends of the line. We would need to do the track work where the work is required, which includes the downtown systems. One of the things we do, one of the process improvements we have made in the last few years, is better advanced planning of our track work, which has allowed more crews to piggyback. So particularly when we're affecting the downtown core, we look farther ahead to ensure that all possible crews can leverage the same outage. So while that may happen in the core on the weeknights or on Friday nights, we will always seek to minimize the impact to customers.
Thank you. All right, so let's look at the other side of what the impact will be on safety and reliability. And in slide 7, you indicate, now we got it this time, one of the targeted areas and big target areas for system has been electrical fires, and you indicate there that the percentage completion for the last fiscal year on the cable measuring testing and the straight current testing is fairly low as compared to the other areas, 55% and 28%. Now, I realize these are multi-year projects, but even taking into account, it seems as though the completion rates so far are a little on the low side. Where would you expect these numbers to be with the expanded hours at the end of fiscal year 2021?
So at the end of fiscal year, we do not plan to change the schedules. Cable measuring will remain a 4-year program. It is a 4-year program based on the needs of our system. and on the recommendations of how frequently the cable installation should be tested in order to identify degrading cables and replace them before we have a catastrophic failure. So cable measuring will continue. At the end of FY19, it was on track. So 2 years through a four-year program, it was just over 50%. This is a case where if we are not able to get the work done on our longer nights, which will now be Saturday and Sunday nights, we may need a bus bridge during the week or on a Friday, because cable measuring requires both tracks power to be brought down. So that is a program I would expect at the end of FY20, it would be at 75% complete, because we do intend to complete this in 4 years, and this is a type of program that will continue on indefinitely, because these cables do need to be measured every 4 years. Stray current testing is behind schedule. It's something we've addressed in prior board updates. We had challenges starting this program and understanding the complexity of doing this testing. We continue to evaluate this program to understand where it's delivering best value for us and how to do it more efficiently and effectively. For example, one of the things we've found is focusing more on the interlockings rather than the mainline segments, as a result, seem to be able to better predict where we have issues and need to do maintenance work. That is a program that we will continue to evaluate the efficiency of it and refine it. But I would expect we will continue doing that program through FY21 until we have data or anything else that can show us a better way to predict and prevent degradation of our assets.
If we stuck with the current hours, would you expect to be able to make more progress on these issues, or do you think that the improvements you're going to make in workbench hours means that, you know, whether we stuck with the current reduced hours or go to the expanded hours, you expect to get the same completion factors on these issues by the end of 2020 and 2021?
For these programs, we will get the same production rate regardless of which hours we choose, because we've committed to doing these programs, and if necessary, we will do late-night bus bridges or single tracking to enable these programs to move forward on schedule. We have no intention of backing off of these programs.
Let me ask you a question on the next slide, slide 8, still along the same area where you show the late-night service hours. If I apply this to a weekend evening, a Friday or Saturday night, so you would start at 2 a.m., and I assume the start would be on the other side, 7 a.m., and if you break down the hours that you need for prep on both sides, you really end up with just 2 hours of productive work time. And so my question is, you know, what can you really do in 2 hours of productive work time? You know, and is this realistic to really believe that you're actually going to be able to achieve something under the proposed hours in this kind of availability of actual work hours?
That is an excellent question. For context, most of our history and most transit properties have this same constraint of having to keep their work window down to 1 to 3 hours in order to advance their work. So we have done a lot of things to try and maximize the efficiency of the work time that we do have. We have many investments we are making in terms of work planning to make sure those crews are as productive and effective as possible, whether they have 2 hours or 2.5 hours of work time, that they can get every minute utilized. We also have a lot of investments targeting what is shown as the orange blocks in terms of how we can more quickly get crews out to work, including staggering their start times to make sure the crews that can best utilize the entire window get out first. Other crews, by the nature of their work, do not need the full 2 hours, so starting them later as one example of the efficiencies we're investing in. So, yes, 2 hours is an effective work night. Is 3 hours better? Yes. Would 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours? Yes. The more time, the better, but it's always a balance against service and against the customers that we're here to serve. The work that really does not fit well into a two-hour window is when we look at using weekend track work to advance that.
For the benefit of my learning as well as the other board members, could you give me an example of something, either a preventive maintenance program or a capital program, that actually can be completed in that two-hour window?
Sure. I'll go back to some of the examples we use in SafeTrack, because we have plenty of pictures out in the media, and we can find those easily. Fastener replacement. Fasteners are, relatively speaking, easier to install in terms of the work required. You have to lift up the rail, take out the old one, install the new one. there's not a lot of setup time. You do not need to disassemble our signaling system in order to install fasteners. So most of our fastener replacement is done in the overnight window. This is in contrast to our wooden cross ties, where in order to replace those, you have to physically remove all of our signaling equipment. You have to lift multiple ties and then re-tamp the ballast below it. We rarely do tie work at night because it is so ineffective. We get perhaps 10 ties done a night as opposed to a weekend where we can get 200. So it's very much about the scope of work, where the cutoff or the point of no return is, how long does it take you to get productive, and how much can you do before you need to start putting the tracks back together. And every scope is evaluated to determine the best way to get it done.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Ron, Mr. Boulder, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize if there's an urgent issue that's ongoing, then I will probably have to step out again. So if this question has been asked and answered, I apologize. But it's my understanding these additional hours are going to increase the net cost roughly $6 million. So I therefore assume that 37% of that will end up being picked up by Maryland, so that DC can extend the hospitality hours. Is that a correct assumption?
It would definitely go into the formula. So yes, that does come back. It is within the 3% cap, though. This is, again, managing, you know, lots of variables. And so this is one of the things that we're trying to do to increase ridership, to meet some demand out there. But it's within the 3% cap.
But even so, if you were not expending that $6 million within that 3%, either that number would be down or you'd be spending it in some other area that might provide more benefit to riders from outside of the district.
Exactly. You could do that.
Yeah, Mr. Hunter, just as a follow-up, so we'll do that. And then Mr. Boulder.
You want to go ahead.
I don't think, Pete, that is accurate. The regional hospitality industry does not end at the District of Columbia's border. It extends into Northern Virginia and into Maryland. Let's just take an example, the Cherry Blossom Festival, which people come from all over the country or all over the world and stay in Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia. And so I don't agree with your consensus.
So that example, Tom, means that once a year we can point out where people come from Maryland to come into the...
No, there's. I use that as a concrete example, Pete. The Marine Marathon, any number of activities, inaugurations, et cetera, not just one time, a one-off. So people stay in Bethesda and Alexandria and Arlington, as well as the District of Columbia.
Thank you. Mr. Horner.
So to manage the conjecture about the extended hours of service, we would understand better how management derives the number of additional trips and how it contributes to additional trips.
Just to put it in context, I think your reference is slide 14.
Slide 14.
Which has the numbers.
Which may, just reveal the management's view on which jurisdictions receive the benefit from the additional hours of service.
So I can tell you that it's quite a deep analysis in terms of how we get to this ridership impact, where the gains are, and the typical trips. We look back at our history of when we did run service at these hours. We look at our current service patterns and projections of where we see likely ridership growth. I do not have those answers on hand, but we can get back to you with a more detailed answer to your question. I do, and we can provide that. Yeah, I just don't have it.
We'll be able to provide that for you, but our planning department analyzes the data of the ridership and tries to come up with an overall average of what the fare would be based on where the ridership is. So,
I think we might come back to some of these ridership issues, but I just want to give other members of the committee and the board a chance to ask some questions. Mr. Bilger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is great news, Paul and your team. Congratulations on making such great strides in such a short period of time from the dark ages or many, many years ago. I congratulate you on and continue the hard work and the efficiencies. Great explanation about what actually can get done in these short windows. We've never really had an explanation of, and having been down in the tunnels at night, it's, you know, it's pretty awesome how to, you know, logistically get all of the teams to dance, to work hard, and thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, and on behalf of the dishwashers, where did Pete go, and waitresses and waiters and who work, past 11:30, and I'll leave you with one anecdotal story that I recently heard from the hospitality industry. When international travelers come to our region, which is the nation's capital, oftentimes they're used to eating late. Think people from Spain.
Beyond 5 o'clock.
Yeah, beyond 5, beyond the early birds. And that's usually sometimes as late as 9:30, 10 o'clock, and they get told, well, the ovens are off. And that is not just in the District of Columbia. That's near the airports and in Maryland as well. Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Smedberg, Ms. McMillan? Nothing there?
Mr. Chairman, I do have one question. Ms. Mason, how does or do summer shutdowns impact the schedule at all, or how do they impact the proposal on the table, or is there any impact from the sub?
There is no particular impact from the summer shutdowns. The work that drives the summer shutdowns is not work that could have been done in the overnight window. We do use that time, though, to advance these programs. So, for example, this past summer, we were able to get a lot of work done south of National that was not at the station area. So it does help us advance these programs, but it does not change the calculus on the overnight hours.
Okay. And could you tell us just a little bit more about the potential bridging that you talked about with buses to help mitigate some of the impacts here?
So we do bus bridging now on the weekends. Many of our customers have probably encountered one in their times riding. It means that when we have a station closed, we may have to bus people between anywhere from 2 to 4 stations in order to get them around the work and to the next place that trains can pick them up. What we would implement here as needed would be to do that after 10 p.m. So from 10 p.m. till closing, whether that's a 2-hour window to midnight or to 2 a.m., to bus bridge them around the shutdown to their destination.
And I'd just like to say, Mr. Chairman, I hear what Secretary Braun said, but I think it's more than just a benefit to one, you know, jurisdiction. There are other implications, societal and otherwise, as it relates to transit, and the impact is, you know, clearly beyond the borders of the District of Columbia, you know, when we look at this issue. So, in my view.
Yeah.
If I may, on slide 16.
I think
16.
That's a fair point to underscore, because I know when I was at a public session last year in Montgomery County, there was a big feeling by those riders that they wanted longer hours so that they could participate and go downtown.
Yeah.
And so it's both wanting to go downtown for the late night activities as well as late night activities that may be in places like Bethesda and Silver Spring.
Yeah, and I think also longer term, I think we have to look at how the region is growing and where new activity centers are, and they're not necessarily in the district. You're looking at, in the Virginia side, you have Arlington and Alexandria, obviously, but you've got all what's going to be happening along the Silver Line and how that dynamic is changing out there and the growth out there. So we're going to be looking longer term at different patterns and way people are commuting on the system instead of just coming into the core. We're going to be seeing things reversing and going out. So I think, we got to keep that in mind as well as we look at this proposal and preparing for a new system.
Mason, I sort of interrupted you to have that colloquy with Mr. Smedberg. Was there a point you wanted to make before we go into some more questions? I wanted to come back to that one as well. let's go back to the slide that Mr. Horner was talking about, slide number 14, which shows the ridership numbers. As I take the ridership impact, it's at 0.4, which is around 400,000 riders, if my math is correct. And when I divide that by 365, I get 1,200 per day as the benefit. Now, that may be a little low because I guess I should take out the Sunday since we're really talking only about 300 days, so maybe it's 1,500 people per day that are benefiting. But is that roughly a fair way to summarize the benefits on the rider side of about 1,500 passengers per day are benefiting from the late night to midnight or on Friday and Saturday going to 2 a.m.? Now, one of the issues raised by Secretary Ron is the subsidy impact on the jurisdictions. One way to address the subsidy impact might be on these extended hours to charge peak fares. Is that something you could provide us some data on as to what that would look like? Because I assume that if you charged peak fares from 11:30 to 12 or 1 to 2, the two consequences would be your revenue would probably increase, but on the other hand, your riders might decrease because of the increased fares. But I think it might be a useful exercise to just see what that would look like if we charged peak fares so that the greater burden was on the people who wanted to take advantage of these late night hours. Provide some benefit for the jurisdiction on the cost side. Let me just ask one more question and get a couple issues out here. The total operating cost you're showing is $5 million for, I guess, operating the system for the extra half an hour on Monday through Thursday and the extra hour on Friday and Saturday. When we went to these hours 2 or 3 years ago with Groundhog Day, I don't remember how many groundhogs this was when we started this system, we also introduced a pattern of so-called late-night bus service, which was very expensive to operate. Does your $5 million reflect a net number that takes into account the ending of that late-night bus service, or is the late-night bus service continuation presumed under this proposal?
So the numbers here reflect just the rail costs. They do not account for any bus savings. However, as I mentioned, this is already built into the FY21 proposed budget, and in the proposed budget, those savings are accounted for, and it's approximately $2 million of savings.
So the savings accounted for are the ending of the late night bus service, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. The other related question is, you have an RFP out there for the ride hailing services, basically Uber and Lyft, to carry late night riders from certain stations, Uber Pool or Lyft Line. Does the proposal contemplate that that experiment, that pilot program, would go forward, or would with the subsidy cost involved, or would that proposal be terminated and not go forward?
Again, it's still a pilot, so we haven't determined that yet.
I'm sorry?
It's a pilot, so we haven't determined that yet what its future would be yet.
But your budget assumes the cost of that pilot going forward right now, or
I'll have to check to make sure what's in there or not. It's a relatively small numbers.
Could you give us, at some point, I guess we'll have a...
We'll follow up. We'll follow up with that and give the information.
Sure.
The issue you're raising is whether we're better off, whatever better means. Essentially, instead of extending hours,
yeah,
keeping the hours as they are,
yeah.
Essentially subsidizing a service by Uber and Lyft,
right,
to take late night workers.
And if we demonstrated more than the cost, then we would
Uber and
Lyft.
I mean, these are issues that we'll staff and we'll do analysis, come back to us with, since we really don't have to reach decision on this until February, March. All right. Other questions? Ms. Miller, Ms. Bolger, Mr. Smedberg? All right. One more question. I think, Ms. Mason, you wanted to focus on slide 15 for a minute as to your recommendations. Okay, I still have it as 15 from an earlier version, maybe. I guess not that one. There's that one. The last bullet, are you proposing that we go through this Groundhog Day exercise every year, or are you proposing that if the committee and the board go forward and adopt these hours extension to midnight, Monday through Thursday, extension to 2 a.m. on Friday and Saturday, that becomes the new standard, that becomes the new Metro Rail hours of service, and we don't see this issue come before us for the next 2 or 3 years? Is that your proposal?
I think that's a board issue to decide, because the current board resolution, if I recall, calls for certain things to happen. So I think you'd have to address it in whatever your resolution calls for. Our goal, obviously, is to provide more transit service when we can. Again, want to say first. And then there's a policy decision beyond that point of to what level do you want to provide it, which is some of the discussion we're having today. So I don't think we have to lock into a date or an hour that it's two and it's two forever, because it can go either way. Which is what Mr. Horner was referring to. So we don't want to eliminate 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. or any other time. if technology and different things in the future allow us to do things, then we would want to provide more service, and the community wants it. So I don't think we necessarily have to say that it's definitive, it's never 3 a.m. today or in the future, but again, that's a policy decision for the board to address.
Mr. Boulder.
Thank you, Paul, for that. As I remember the resolution, it was on the hours of service, it was temporary, right? Okay. So let's keep that in mind, and then what Paul said is the future.
Let me respond. I mean, as a board member, I would hope that we can resolve this hour of service issue and not go back to repeating this exercise every year. I hope that we'll be able to come to a decision, and whatever hours we agree on will be the hours that we make, at least our hours of service standard, at least for the next 2-3 years or some period going forward, so that we don't come back to have to review this issue on an annual basis. And I hope that our district representatives, you know, hear that and will consider that as we go through this process over the next couple months.
Fine, Mr. Chairman. I think getting back to 4 extra hours and a couple hours on the weekend going forward, we'll see how it goes. And then make the staff keep on working hard on the efficiencies of the work hours that you have, and keep on the path, and we'll see where we end up. But I think in the long run, I would agree that it'd be nice to have a standard so that we can publicize it and employers and employees know they can get a ride.
I see what you're saying. Well, one thing is, I, as a member, if we go forward this way, from my point of view, this is going to be the standard going forward in terms of hours of service. All right, I just have one other question. A rider constituent raises, and this is a slide balancing maintenance and capital work with increased service hours. Let's see. All right, on the third bullet, the question is, you phrased that Metro will use late night bus bridges. I guess the question is it you definitely will be moving during that path, or is it a may? Is the right verb that should be used there.
Are they implying it's necessary?
Yes. Is it definitely something that riders should be prepared for, or is it a kind of may that, depending on how things go over the rest of this fiscal year, as we look forward to the start of next fiscal year, that you may not need the bus bridges and single tracking?
I think it is safe to say we will need them, but we will only use them when it's necessary. So it is not a dire every single night of the week, but we reserve that right that when we need to, we will do that.
Very good. So we may have some commentary from that from riders and others as we go into the public hearing on the budget early in January, and people may want to raise that and comment on that. The 1,500 riders.
Mr. Chairman, point of reference, just to clarify, when will we start the public hearing in January?
I believe that these would be public hearings in connection with the budget, so
yeah.
I assume that will be in January.
All right, starting here in the boardroom?
I don't know. Maybe the Secretary can address that.
What's your...
We haven't determined the exact timeline yet, but they will be beginning in January at some point. So the board has to approve the authorization to go to public hearing next
right.
month.
Okay.
And so once we do that, we'll have some better information for you at that time.
Okay. Would that include having outside entities, organizations come to the public hearing?
Anyone is welcome to come and testify.
Oh, got
yes,
it.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Very good. Seeing... no more questions. I would thank you for that presentation. We'll be returning to this over the next couple months, leading to decisions in February or March. With no further business coming before the committee, we stand adjourned. The Finance Committee will meet in this room. after a short break.